Coincidentally, today, of course, is also our health feature. We do it between 11 and 12 every single Wednesday. Our One Health conversation overlapping a little bit, but Professor Jonathan Peter has been incredibly kind. He's the unit head of the Lung Institute at the University of Cape Town. Professor Peter, good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me and having me. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And of course, for our health feature today, we're talking about hereditary angioedema. Now, I've just let some doctors get out of the studio. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, that's correct. It's pronounced exactly that, hereditary angioedema. And part of the reason we're bringing this, obviously, to listeners is that last week on Monday the 16th was actually angioedema, hereditary angioedema day internationally or worldwide, where we look to raise awareness for this condition. So that's where that's what we're talking about.
Professor Peter, to be honest, I've never heard about this condition. What is it? Tell us more about it.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, just as well, we're talking about it, I guess. The first thing to talk about, I guess, is what is angioedema, because people will be much more familiar with this. And this is one of the tricky parts, actually, about recognizing and identifying this more uncommon group with the genetic or hereditary form. So angioedema is literally swelling below the skin. So in the sub, what we call the submucosal or the dermal space. So, you know, people will be familiar perhaps with the concept of wheals. And this is actually the concept of more deep seated swellings in the skin, but also in the mucosa, so like, for instance, the tongue. And now the commonest, by far, reason for this is traditional allergy. Somebody eats a food allergy or a drug allergy, and then they develop one of these swellings. Now, it can affect any part of the body. It could be the eye, the face, the tongue, the body limbs. And you know, most people will be familiar with that concept. Now, where this condition, the hereditary forms of this come in, is that although the very common presentations that, you know, the general public may be more familiar with and even doctors may be more familiar with, buried amongst that group that's triggered by foods or drugs or whatever is this group where these swellings are triggered by a genetic enzyme problem in certain individuals and in certain families. Because actually what's interesting is this, usually it occurs in families with an autosomal dominant inheritance, which means that often when you find one affected member and you take their family history, you'll see that in every generation, there's a history of people that would have these swellings. Most of the time, it would come completely out of the blue. So no obvious trigger, although we know that things like trauma or stress or hormonal changes can trigger. A lot of the time, these swellings come for the first time, just totally out of the blue. And the big problem with them, unfortunately, is that you can, in addition to have swelling of your skin or of your eye or those things, you can have swelling of your upper airway, what's called your larynx. And if you have swelling of that, that is life-threatening because you can actually effectively choke, you asphyxiate, you cannot breathe. And unfortunately, sadly, every year around the world, there are deaths due to this condition, including we've had deaths in South Africa, unfortunately, where this happens, where the swelling affects the airway. And so this is the reason why we just need to get the message out about people that have these swellings that are unexplained and that keep happening. We need patients and their families to think about this, that it might not be just ordinary allergy, and we need doctors to recognize this. Because, you know, sometimes doctors are even unaware of these things because there are so many genetic conditions that it's really hard for people to keep up. And so it's really important that we kind of bring awareness and talk about this condition.
Professor Peter, when you look at hereditary angioedema more specifically, I mean, how prevalent would you say it is in a country like South Africa?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So we've done some studies here in the Western Cape, and we are probably the biggest center in South Africa and Africa as a continent. And we have now a cohort or like a group of about over 100 patients of these, some of whom are in the same family, as I mentioned. And we the kind of have done some estimates of this, that roughly we see about one in every 100 to 120,000 population. So what that means is in a country like ours, which is 56 million, we should probably have close to 500 to 600 patients, which means there's about 400 patients out there that we've got no idea about. They are kind of hiding and with no diagnosis yet, with a potentially life-threatening condition. So really important that we get this word out. And importantly as well, you know, we've got a diverse healthcare system that spans urban and rural settings. And what is important about this condition is we have found cases in several different provinces, and it occurs in all population groups. So it's not confined to one demographic as well.
How is it diagnosed, Professor Peter?
So the way we diagnose, the first thing is obviously recognition. So, you know, people have to realize that this is something where you have, if you have these unexplained swellings that recur repeatedly and you have a family history, that should sound the alarm bell. And then actually we've got a very simple blood test that can really help to identify this patient pretty quickly. And then in more advanced settings, if necessary, and we're trying to kind of really narrow this down, we've also got some genetic tests that we send away overseas too. But actually, we've got a pretty good blood test that can certainly quickly, even in remote areas of the country, rule this diagnosis out. So we can work out that this is not an issue. And so it really can be diagnosed fairly easily across the public and the private sector.
Is it clear when one may actually be suffering from hereditary angioedema? And I'm asking this just to say, is it something that is clearly identified at birth, or is it something that one has to discover as they grow?
So we have got, like I said, we've got some families where, for instance, when they have children, we know that they have a 50-50 chance, and we will follow them closely and diagnose them. And sometimes we will make a diagnosis in a child that has never, ever had a swelling. So before they've had a swelling. Now, on the whole, the frequency of these swellings occurs more commonly with age and often increases only at puberty. So it's quite possible for somebody in their, you know, second, third decade of life to have their first swelling. And so therefore, people do need to be aware of it. It's not something that necessarily is always evident straight from childhood, although we have also had cases where children present like this at the age of one or two with their first swellings. So it's sort of the presentation can be quite different across the different age groups. But most of the time, what we need is people need to be aware of anybody or themselves or family members or other people they know, if they're having repeated swellings that are unexplained, and it can affect, like I said, any body part, face, eye, limbs, okay? And usually the swellings come up over a course of about 24 hours, and then they will, if you just leave them and they're not in a particularly dangerous area, let's say your hand swells after you bump it, that would tend to resolve on its own after about 2 or 3 days. So oftentimes when these patients are diagnosed, you actually ask them, and they've actually been having swellings that they haven't known about for several years. You can also sadly have swellings within your tummy. So actually your intestines can get swelling into the bowel wall that presents with terrible abdominal pain. And sometimes when you go back, when you finally, these patients have a diagnosis, you go back and you see that when they were at school or whatever, they would have unexplained for 3 days, they would have severe abdominal pain and nobody could find a reason for it, and then it would just get better on its own. And so it's even more reason to be aware of. And I think the other thing to say to people is a much more common thing is for patients to develop hives. Now, hives are those small, itchy wheals that occur on the skin as well. Now, on the whole, if these swellings, these angioedema swellings, occur together with wheals, the vast, vast majority of those are driven by a food or a drug, and people will get the standard treatments for that because that's much more common. So really what we're looking at for here is we're looking for swellings that occur without patients getting wheals. So when they're occurring in isolation, that's the group that we need to be particularly aware of and in whom we would want to try to make this diagnosis.
And how is it treated?
So that's also great, is that an important point here, is that normal, the hives with these swellings that I've been talking about. So if you go to an emergency room and you've got one of these swellings, you will be treated with traditional anti-allergy medicine that might include antihistamine, adrenaline. Now, for this condition, that medicines will not work. And very excitingly, over the last sort of 10 or 15 years, we have developed, when I say we, I mean the sort of international scientific community, have developed targeted therapies that work on the mechanism and compensate for that mechanism. And so there are specific treatments available that can stop these attacks. So, for instance, I mentioned that this attack can last 3 or 4 days, for instance. We've got a treatment that could resolve it within an hour or two.
And would you say that, that has been quite significant in terms of, breakthroughs in medical treatment for angioedema?
Definitely. So This area has been a very exciting area of development in terms of drug development over the last sort of 10 to 20 years. And what it's led to is not just these targeted therapies that treat you when you're having an attack. So this is why I mentioned like an attack that could last 3 to 4 days can now be treated and potentially resolved within an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also been in the realm of what we call prophylactic drugs. So we can give people a drug that they take once a day, for instance, that will prevent them from even having these swellings in the first place. So there's been exciting developments in both what we call prophylactic treatments as well as acute treatments.
Just in terms of the center that you are part of, Professor Peter, which you say, is probably one of the biggest in the country and on the continent, when it comes to the treatment of angioedema, what do you find are often the challenges that people have, those who have been diagnosed with this disease?
So we still have a kind of two challenges. The one is related to diagnosis, which we've been talking about. So, frequently across the continent, people will have several years of these swellings without the right diagnosis. So that's definitely the first major challenge, which actually we experience across the world, but definitely in our local setting, we experience this. And the second is even once the diagnosis has been made, several of these treatments are not necessarily readily available with the patient. So if the patient goes to a routine emergency center, they won't necessarily have these treatments. So they need to come and have a doctor diagnose the condition and help them to get access to these medicines. And then the third problem, which is, a global problem and particularly relevant to our setting, is the cost. So although there's been a lot of exciting development in this field, many of these newer medicines come at a hefty price tag. And so developing strategies with funders, with the state sector, to make sure that these medicines are paid has posed a major challenge for both us as healthcare providers, but also for patients.
We'll continue our conversation with Professor Jonathan Peter. We're talking about hereditary angioedema, and he was talking about the fact that last week marked World Hereditary Angioedema Day, and this is really an opportunity to raise awareness about this illness to the South African population. We're going to take a quick break. I'm back with Professor Peter after this. Well, it's safe to say that a chunk of our show today has been focusing on health, even though different aspects of healthcare. And for our healthcare feature today, we're focusing on hereditary angioedema. Professor Jonathan Peter is the unit head of the Lung Institute at the University of Cape Town. Professor Peter, when we talked about the prevalence of this disease in the country, you said you believe that there are many people who are going undiagnosed. And I wonder, from a primary healthcare perspective, I mean, is the process of identifying this illness and then passing people on for referrals. Is that easy in our healthcare system?
So the short answer to that is no, it's not. Mm. I think that doctors across the across different levels of care are under a lot of pressure, and they are also, like I mentioned with this condition, the clinical features, the swellings and these things are much more frequently associated with other forms of allergy. And so, in busy primary care practices, the problem will be that these patients will be seen by many different doctors, and the bulk of the patients have an allergy that can be quickly dealt with. And so I think the problem is that they can be overlooked. The other issue in many of our sectors is that we do not really have great continuity of care. So, often emergency rooms, for instance, are stocked or staffed by kind of rotating doctors or part-time doctors. And as a result, the same patient might present to the same facility with swellings recurrently, mm-hmm. and yet every time they're seeing a different doctor.
Mm.
And that poses the challenge that, the individual doctor doesn't necessarily know this person unless they ask, is having recurrent swelling. So that's why for me, we've recently launched another initiative through my center because we're certified as what's called the Angioedema and Urticaria Care Center internationally. And part of that is advocacy. And so what we've launched to try and aid this is something called the Angioedema Hotline. And what this is that my team provides a 24-hour call service for doctors and even for patients that have these problems to help in the diagnosis. So if somebody is struggling and they want a question or, they're not sure, they can call this hotline and we can help them to try and tease out what these patients are, whether they are presenting in a rural clinic in Mpumalanga or they are presenting to our tertiary healthcare system here at Schwitzky Hospital, for instance.
Mm.
And so, these are the kinds of things we're trying to do to address that kind of problem. And then I also think part and parcel of that is this kind of conversation we're having today, where actually sometimes the best way of identifying these is by word of mouth for patients. So it's a patient themselves or a patient family that's been battling with these swellings for sometimes years that are really looking for answers. And so the other thing that's been really making a difference in this country and globally has been the patient organization, which is called HAE South Africa, and it's a branch of HAE International, which is now in more than 80 countries globally. And these patient organizations, so they've got a Facebook page, they have a social media presence, and this kind of thing, often now we are seeing new patients diagnosed through connecting, through the patient themselves, hearing about this and being connected with the patient organization, and the patient organization has links to our center or to other doctors, and then they can connect. And then another form of good advocacy that we are having in South Africa, increasingly important in the whole area of allergy, is the Allergy Foundation of South Africa. Their website is www.allergyfoundation.co.za. And then they have on their website lots of information about this condition. They also have the ability to list and see in your local area in South Africa if there is a person that's knowledgeable about allergy that somebody can go for a potential mm-hmm. review and maybe a diagnosis. And then lastly, we are connecting ourselves. We have a website. If you look up the Allergy and Immunology Unit at the UCT of Lung Institute, you put that into Google, you will find our site, which also has a lot of information on this condition and a way of connecting with us. And certainly with COVID, we've really improved on our telemedicine and telehealth. And so we now have been advising people from across the country that need help. So those are the sort of strategies to really address the question that you were asking around the fact that in primary health care, there are many patients that are probably missed for many different challenges.
So, Dr. Peter, you've mentioned quite a number of platforms that people can go to. I think just for ease of reference, if somebody has a question and perhaps they think a family member they know, even themselves, they might suspect angioedema, where should they go?
I think the two points of reference would be first the HAE Patient Society, so that's HAE South Africa, and you can connect with them on Facebook or in a private messaging thing.
Okay.
Then the other would be the Allergy Foundation, because the Allergy Foundation has a list of practitioners around the country. So, you can be all over the South Africa and be able to connect. And that website I said to you was allergyfoundation.co.za, so www.allergyfoundation. And then lastly, if people still don't come out in that route, I'm more than happy for people to reach out to my unit, although we are based in Cape Town, and that is the Allergy and Immunology Unit at the UCT Lung Institute.
Professor Jonathan Peter, let me thank you so much for coming onto the show this morning and again for sharing your knowledge and your insights.